Their tractors have been bearing down on Europe's capitals. From Berlin to Bucharest, Warsaw to Brussels, farmers venting their fury. With margins squeezed by inflation and big distribution, which has been driving down market prices in the name of protecting consumers' pocketbooks. Here in France, the movement's gone from the impoverished small family farms of the Southwest to the gates of the capital. In a nation that's particularly proud of its peasant roots, whose agro-industry giants rank among the world leaders, we'll ask about the fury and the distress, and about the government's pledge to streamline red tape. And while the EU is forced to justify and possibly review new environmental norms that farmers say only open the door to less regulated competitors from around the world, the far right is making political hay out of what it portrays as woke globalist tree huggers out of touch with reality. All this is happening, of course, ahead of June's European elections.
That was France 24. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Today we're going to be talking about how the farms of Europe, oh, it's farms all over the world, including American farms, but today the farms and the farmers all over Europe are fighting back the incredibly irrational and destructive requests and demands of the World Economic Forum through their governments. It is a nightmare. And yet, especially in Holland, in the Netherlands, they're fighting back in such courageous ways. It's kind of a great story. So we want to tell that story today with a Dutchman. You know you're listening to Sandy Rios, I hope, on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can go to sandyrios.com to listen to the podcast or to any podcast platform, and especially to AFR.net, which is American Family Radio. That's our home base. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. And so all of those things will help us be a team here as we try to get the word out on all of these important things, topics that I'm talking about in these dangerous days that we're living. Let me tell you a story. There was a girl named Katrina, and she had a dream that she was pregnant with a baby boy. And she heard a voice that said, Eli. But many around her were pressuring her to get an abortion. By God's grace, she was led to preborn network clinics where she was given a free ultrasound. And when she saw her baby on the sonogram, she was amazed to see that her baby had a halo. And then she heard his heartbeat. At that moment, she had no doubt there was a miracle growing inside her womb. Oh, that's Katrina's story. It's a beautiful story, and a life was changed by the work of preborn. And that life was changed by the generous giving of many of you who listen to Sandy Rios 24/7. If you'd like to help, it's $28 per ultrasound. $28, that's all. Just one baby's life saved, $28. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Rens de Koning, who is a leader of the conservative movement in Holland, is joining us in a minute. He's been involved in this fight with the farmers, and there is so much to learn from him. So stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
The definition of a protest is a statement or action expressing disapproval of or objection to something. Often they're a peaceful display hoping to invoke change. Earlier in the year, European farmers were under intense pressure to reach extreme climate goals, which was jeopardising their livelihoods. Pressure levelled by the World Economic Forum saw countries across Europe effectively declare war on farming in their fight to bring down emissions. But in the Netherlands, farmers made their voices heard, objecting to these extreme goals.
Yeah. the Dutch government is embarked upon insane efforts to slash greenhouse gases and reduce the amount of nitrogen ammonia in the soil by 30 to 70% by 2030, or even by up to 95% in some places, in order to meet green EU climate change targets that Holland has signed up to. And this means literally turfing people off their farms.
That was Sky News out of Australia reporting on the rebellion of farmers in Europe and specifically in the Netherlands. We're going to go to the Netherlands, well, actually not to the Netherlands, but we're going to talk to a Dutchman right now. Rens de Koning is a Dutchman. He lives here, though. He married an American girl. I met him recently, by the way, and he has served as an officer in the Royal Dutch Air Force for many years. And after that, he began working in the corporate world for large organizations. These names are not familiar to us, but the last one, Dutch Railways, might give us an idea. He was very politically active as a regional coordinator for the Dutch Conservative Party, which is called Forum for Democracy. He was responsible for half of the province of Gelderland, which is one of the major agricultural provinces of the Netherlands, responsible for half the province of Gelderland. And he also led campaigns against the COVID vaccine mandates in the Netherlands. That just gives you an idea of who he is and what we're going to talk about. Rens, first of all, welcome to the United States and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. You know, Rens, I think I know quite a bit about Holland. I was there actually. Now, you're not going to believe this because this is how old I am. I was there in 1973 when I was in Holland, which is this little tiny country. Right in the midst of all the European countries, little tiny, that's made this most incredible mark on the world in so many ways, going back to Peter the Great from Russia going there to learn how to build ships, to financing, to industry. It's pretty amazing what the Netherlands have done. But when I was there, Rens, that so long ago, communists were marching in the streets almost every day in Amsterdam. I mean, boldly, loudly. So I'm curious. Now, you're a lot younger, you wouldn't remember that, but how would you describe the government there in 2024? How is your government now?
I would describe the Dutch government as the most liberal government in the world. They are the country who was the first country who introduced gay marriage to the Western world. They're the country who first started with transgender surgeries. They're the country who said that there was a night curfew during the COVID pandemic, saying that people were not allowed to walk the streets after like 8 or 9 p.m. at night because apparently the virus is worse then or something. I'm not really sure. But they had quite draconian and I might even argue quite totalitarian ways of really treating people, but very much from this like extreme leftist point of view of like, we're here for your safety, we're here to take care of you, so please listen to your government.
It's kind of the kind of the new form of communism / socialism, more subtle, working through the democratic process. But you know, when I think of the Dutch, and I do have a lot of Dutch friends, I have to say, I think of very, very intelligent, very industrious. I don't think of them as being rebel rousers. I would say, though, during World War II, you had an incredible resistance movement. But since that time, it seems like maybe we just don't hear it here, but I don't know of uprisings. Before this farming clash, which we're going to talk about, of course, Were there any demonstrations against COVID? Anything else earlier than that? Any resistance to this government?
Absolutely, yes. I've been at multiple demonstrations in the Netherlands against COVID and stuff like that. But usually you don't really hear a lot about it because the Dutch are, I would say, generally are quite peaceful. We really don't like really putting ourselves out there in that way until we really have that enough is enough type of mentality. Although I will say that historically speaking, usually when the agricultural sector, when the farmers stand up, that's actually been something that even takes us back all the way to the Middle Ages in terms of Dutch history, where usually that kind of means the end of an era. when they usually get the hardworking people on the grounds who are actually taking care of providing all of our food, once you attack that demographic of people, that's when things get real.
Well, and they've certainly gotten real there. In fact, this what is termed as the Farmers' Revolt started in 2019. Now, I don't know if that's just in the Netherlands or if that applies to France and Germany and, you know, Sri Lanka for that matter. Is that the genesis of the problem in, is 2019 the genesis? Is that the right year?
Yeah, well, I would say a few years before that, actually, we had a few government documents that were kind of already setting things up that were saying this is the way we're going. But there was zero media attention to what they were actually saying until in 2019, Minister Remkes from the Dutch government actually said, well, this whole CO2 issue is completely and utterly created by the farmers. It's all the farmers' fault, which turned out was completely false. Even if you believe all of their false statistics, even then there are way much larger emissions by other sectors than the agricultural one. But that's what really started this in 2019. That's the kind of the flame that ignited it all.
I've been surprised, you know, because Holland is not such a big country, at least prospectively. When I saw these protests, I mean, like, what, 2,000 tractors going through the streets of Amsterdam, I was amazed, and festivals or protest marches, amazed at the number of farmers. How much of the economy of Holland or the Netherlands is dependent on farming? Do you know?
I don't have the exact figures here in front of you, but knowing that the Netherlands has always been fluctuating as one of the top three, top four biggest food exporters, not just in Europe, but of the world, means that a country that is like, what, one-fifth, one-sixth the size of Texas is able to produce that amount of food with so much innovative technology. It is a huge part of our country, which is also historically the case, right? Because apart from a little bit of some gas fields in the north of the Netherlands, we have very few to no natural resources. So ever since the 1600s, that's how far back we're going, the Netherlands has been a country of import and export and of trade. And so in that sense, selling the stuff that we have and buying stuff has always been the main part of our economy.
Well, thus the ships that Peter the Great went to learn how to build. That makes sense. So, So, Rens, what was the straw that broke the camel's back, as we say here in the United States? What was the issue, the thing that happened that caused your farmer friends and you to say, that's it, too much, no further? What happened?
What happened is that the Dutch government decided that they were going to listen to the WEF and to the European Parliament, which has created this new rule related to the Natura 2000 laws, which basically state that there are certain nature areas that have to be protected, which are beautiful parks that we indeed have, that are right in the middle of our agricultural businesses, that are not allowed to suffer because of too much CO2, because apparently certain plants would be dying. And so because of that, farmers would have to be forced to sell their land. And not only that, they would have to sign, they'd be forced to sign a piece of paper saying that they are not allowed to use the little money that they would get from this forced sale to buy another piece of land somewhere else and farm somewhere else. So they would get an agreement that says that they are never allowed to farm again.
Wow.
That's kind of the thing that broke the camel's back, is like, that's absolutely ridiculous. You cannot just force someone to sell the property that they have worked on for generations. And a property that farmers wanted to hand over to their sons and daughters, so that they could take over the family business at some point. And that's what just made it impossible. And just to give you another piece of information on that, another big thing is that they weren't just never allowed to farm in the Netherlands. Because this was EU mandated, they are never allowed to farm again anywhere inside of the European Union. said I couldn't even go abroad.
Wow. Well, you know, I think about it too, and I don't want to overstate this, but because of the size of your country, there isn't exactly that much farmland either. It's not like in the United States. Well, we're losing our farmland too, as you well know, but we have always had traditionally so much space and so much potential. But when people give up their farmland after centuries of owning it and having their families raise and, you know, take up the family business, this is huge. Okay, so did some farmers actually get forced into this?
So obviously a lot of the protests that have been going on since 2019 did make the governments kind of back down. Also, the parties that were running the cabinet at that moment majorly lost in their most recent elections. And so there have been some changes there. However, a new government is forming, and even though it's slightly different parties, there is one major conservative party called the PVV from Geert Wilders, who majorly won the election. He's quite conservative. He's very much pro-farmers. However, he needs to work with other parties to actually form a majority in the House. And so he needs to work together with more centered parties that very much claim they are in favor of the farmers, but however, who still acknowledge that there's a huge CO2 problem, who still acknowledge the rules that Brussels is laying and is mandating on a sovereign country like the Netherlands. And so we are far from being out of the woods yet.
Let me just interject to people listening that Geert Wilders is well-known in America, at least to many of us that are conservatives. We've met him, heard him speak. He's the one who took on the invasion, really, the Islamic invasion that was allowed by the European Union. He was the first to speak out against that, paid a great price, and he did just recently win the leadership in the Netherlands. But you heard Rens just say it's still a fight. You know, let's go back to the nuts and bolts a little bit, Rens, because you in terms of taking the land, they're claiming that CO2, which is necessary for all of human life and plant life and animal life, is this dangerous thing that's killing the planet. And so much of this is fanciful to anyone who understands geography and science, and to the extent that we can know that. But there are other fanciful things that sound so convincing under this whole. You guys call it the Green Deal. We call it the Green New Deal. What are the other nitrogen's part of this too? Explain the war against nitrogen is playing in this.
Yes, absolutely. So nitrogen is the other major issues with which they specifically want to attack the farmers, because nitrogen is supposedly, according to all of these leftist extremists, which is how I call them really, is one of the very substances, chemical compounds, whatever, that is so detrimental to nature and to specific plants in the Netherlands. And I can almost not say this without laughing, honestly.
You can laugh.
So what they're saying, obviously, the cows, they defecate on the land, and that releases nitrogen, which is true. Because of that, they're basically saying, because the majority of the farmers have cows in the Netherlands, a lot of them do have livestock, they are rid of their livestock effective immediately. And so they're trying to do everything to kind of force the farmers to even sell large chunks of their land. So try to motivate them to start growing crops instead of livestock and stuff like that. And basically force them out of the business of farming altogether gradually by attacking the livestock first. So that's why there's such a focus on nitrogen. I think it has absolutely nothing to do with an actual nitrogen problem. However, you have to understand, even the German farmers are standing up right now, but the German laws in terms of nitrogen are about 20 times more lenient than the actual Dutch ones. the Dutch farmers have it way more difficult when it comes to their ridiculous nitrogen laws, where they're forcing fines on farmers or other forms of punishment if they have too much nitrogen emissions and things like that. Interestingly enough, especially in 2019, when everything set off, the farmers were even willing to talk to the Dutch government with these ridiculous demands and say, hey, why don't we create more innovative ways to reduce our nitrogen as long as we can still keep farming the way that we can? And the Dutch government absolutely rejected that offer. They didn't want them to innovate, which proves to any normal thinker that this has very little to do with an actual nitrogen problem or an actual issue in that area. This has to do with land and who owns it.
Yeah. You know, anybody that's tried to raise plants or do a garden, or it happens to be a farmer that's listening, know that since way back we used manure. Cow manure for fertilizer. That's what we still use, various versions of that. That's what fertilizer is made up of, the most effective fertilizers. So to say that that's killing natural, growth, it just defies any kind of logic, as though there might be any. But why would Holland have, this maybe is answering one question I was going to ask you. Is this coming from your government? Is it coming from the EU? Is it coming from the World Economic Forum? Which entity has the power to do this to you guys?
Well, I would like to answer that multiple choice question by saying all of the above.
But, okay.
We've had a prime minister for over a decade right now. He's still the missionary prime minister until this new government is formed. But that's Mark Rutte that I'm talking about. And this is someone who has absolutely sold out the Netherlands to the European Union. And you can go back, the amount of legislation, we don't have the time today to discuss the amount of legislation that he passed with his party, the VVD, basically giving an incredible amount of power to the European Union. And so the European Union has a lot of power to tell the Netherlands what they should do on all these major issues we're facing today, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's the agricultural crisis, whether it's the Israel-Palestine stuff, whether it's truly unbelievable. They're truly taking the sovereignty of a nation away under this globalist agenda. And the reason why Brussels and why the European Union is doing that is because of the other organization that you mentioned, Sandy, which is the WEF. It's the World Economic Forum. Obviously, they meet on a regular basis, and they basically discuss how they want to get to this unified global plan where everything needs to come together. And one of the things that they already shared is that they want to turn the Netherlands, which is like land-wise, somewhat of a smaller country, they want to turn that into some hybrid city. And that's why all the farmers need to go. And they need to be moved elsewhere. Ironically, they even mentioned Ukraine as one of the major agricultural places that they have picked. So this is all very much connected, all these different issues to each other, if you ask me. And what you see is that it's the WEF who gives an assignment to the European Union, which then basically gives the marching orders to the heads of state of the different European countries.
Rens, the sound kicked out just for one word. You said they want to turn Holland into a hybrid what? I missed that word.
Oh, a hybrid city.
Hybrid city. Yes, okay. Yeah, with public transportation and little bitty people living in high rises, which is what they're trying to, the left, the World Economic Forum, fill in the blanks. This is what they want to do. But in the meanwhile, what they're doing, we need to say plainly, is destroying the world's food supply. It's not just the Netherlands. It's France. It's, as you said, Ukraine. It's now the United States. They want to do away with meat, with cows. It is so fanciful, Rens. It's like some science fiction movie, really. But that is what they're trying to do, isn't it? Turn us into cities and make us hungry and dependent on the teat of government. Their one world government, I think, is what they want to establish. I used to never say that phrase, but I really am seeing it more that way. And they're trying to do this worldwide.
You're absolutely right. This is absolutely not about the Netherlands. You're absolutely correct. It is very much. I believe that the WEF, even for some years, called the Netherlands a quote unquote testing garden for the world, where they wanted to try out different things and then see what the social response is before they would actually bring this on the big stage and introduce this to big countries like, for example, the United States. You can, for example, look at, for example, the gas prices that obviously have gone up in all these different countries, but they went up in the Netherlands before they went up, for example, in the United States, where they wanted to see what happens if we put so much more tax on gas prices and we make them so much more expensive. What will the social response be? And once it kind of like checks all the boxes that they wanted to check, that's when they then introduce it on the big stage in the United States.
The one thing I think, yes, I know, it's just a big pattern that you can see. The more you know, the more you see it. They're really not that subtle, and they actually boast about what they're doing if people are paying attention and if they can find it online. So much information is not available to people. That's why you and I need to talk about this. We're talking about food supply, the world's food supply. So we haven't said enough, though, about the fight from the farmers of the Netherlands. And you belong to this group, Farmers Defense Force. I believe you do, right? Or you're affiliated with them.
Yes, I've had multiple conversations with them. I was standing on the protest fields with them, together with Forum for Democracy, when we were protesting this in the last few years. So I'm not a member of their organization, though. No.
Okay. But let's say more about the fight, because they have organized so incredibly. People are angry. So I have to ask the question, do you think that most Dutchmen are understanding what's going on here?
Absolutely, yes. One of the most noteworthy things is that during the protests, when the Dutch farmers would use their tractors to shut down the roads, what they would usually do, especially in The Hague, where our Dutch parliament is, that's where they block the roads the most, the Dutch farmers would actually take their produce from their lands and cook breakfast for all the citizens of The Hague. We could just pick up free eggs and free things to basically tell them, I'm sorry I have to inconvenience you, but I'm doing this to make sure that I will still have a livelihood. In the meanwhile, please share in my produce and eat my eggs and eat the produce of my land. And so these are, for example, one of the actions, especially early on, that made the farmers actually quite popular with the Dutch citizens, even though they were heavily inconvenienced by blocked off traffic.
That sounds a little bit like the truckers in Canada. They did clever things like that,
right?
Too. Yeah. All right. But there's something coming up, and you've alluded to it, and that is you're having a demonstration. This particular group, Farmers Defense Force, are going to be protesting or whatever they're going to do in The Hague on June the 4th. So why? Why that? And what's the end game here? Is there another election?
No, there's not. The election has already been, but this is where the Netherlands and where a lot of European countries are quite different from the United States, where there's not like one Republican or one Democratic party who is winning the election and then they will produce a president. You know, there's multiple parties that have to come together and have to compromise on their own agendas in order to kind of have agreements with the other parties and form a majority. And so what they want to do in the Netherlands with these protests is kind of get the attention of Geert Wilders and say, hey, listen, do not forget the promises you've made when we voted for you. Actually, you know, keep your back straight and make sure that you actually deliver on making sure that the farmers can stay alive, that our profession can remain alive. Because even though Geert Wilders is quite a popular and good conservative in many different ways, at the same time, he has to negotiate with quite left-wing parties to form a coalition together. And that's just, we know the polarization. We even see it here in the United States. We know how hard it has become to really talk to someone on the other side of the aisle. And that's no different over there. And so to actually happen to form a government with people who you really very much disagree with is a very hard task. I don't envy Mr. Wilders and the task he has ahead of him. But at the same time, if he if he's going to bow down to the demands of the left right now, then I don't think we'll have much of a food supply system in the world soon. And so there's a lot at stake there.
There's a lot at stake going on right now, and the people of the world. I've just had a discussion about communism and how it grew and sprung and its manifestations here in the United States right now. And the theme, though, Rince, is that communism has always failed. It may do so much damage to everywhere it goes. It does damage. It kills people's spirits. It kills their countries. But it never prevails forever. It just doesn't. And so with that, we just keep fighting. I know that you do, too. I hope that we can talk again, Rince. I would love to have a longer conversation with you, but let me thank you for your time this morning. Is there anything Americans can do to help?
Keep owning your own land, because they're going to try and do the same thing here. Especially my younger generation, everyone is busy renting apartments right now. Still try to own your own land and have some pride in it. Because as Bill Gates is buying all the farmland here in the U.S., make sure that there's still a country that is free. Because the Netherlands might be a little too late.
Wow. All right. Sadly, we say goodbye to you right now, Rince De Koning, and we can pray for you, too. And I think a lot of people in my audience do pray, and I just ask them to pray for Holland, and just we need to intercede for the entire world that God would have mercy. That's how I see it right now. Rince De Koning from Holland. It's such a pleasure to talk to you, Rince, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I told you earlier today about Katrina and how she had a dream that she was pregnant with a little boy, and how she went to a preborn network clinic, saw him in utero, and decided to not go through an abortion. It's a beautiful story. There are so many like them. If you have the means, I wonder if you would consider a larger gift, more than the $28, if you have the ability to do that. Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 would sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would rescue not one, not two, not three, but 200 babies. To donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life, from a small-town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
Now to the Netherlands, where the Dutch provincial elections were held last week. And voters took the opportunity to send a message to their green climate change obsessed, World Economic Forum obsessed government of Mark Rutte. After months of fighting against plans to lower nitrogen emissions in the soil by reducing livestock and closing farms, remember, we showed you all those demonstrations, Dutch farmers turned up to vote in the same style as they did during the recent protests. Well, they turned up. Have a look. Now, the Farmers' Party was only formed in 2019, but they are now set to become the biggest party in the parliament. Democracy works against the tyrants, the authoritarian tyrants of the World Economic Forum and elsewhere.
All right, that was Sky News again. And, of course, he's reporting on a recent election where the farmers and the conservatives formed their own party, and they won handily in that election. Of course, Rince just told us it's not over because another election's coming up. And you know how it is here. We win one thing and then we lose 10 more. And so that's kind of the situation with them. Let me just bring Bruce in briefly. Bruce, what did you think? You've never heard Rince. I got to meet him at a conference not long ago, and I was so compelled to talk to him. I'm glad I did.
Well, as in so many of these situations, this just reminds me of many things we talk about, in that it's what better way to control a population than to control their food. Nothing gets people more subservient than being hungry and having a way to satisfy that hunger. You know, this is the same old story that we always see, where these programs are given euphemistic names, you know, rescuing the climate,
the Green New Deal.
The Green New Deal. And then they also, as part of it, demonize people. So in this case, first off, this is about carbon dioxide emission. There still is no science that shows that carbon dioxide has a significant effect on the environment. And number two is, you know, when you have these kind of situations, look for who will benefit if these things happen. This World Economic Forum, it's populated by people that are zillionaires.
Yeah.
And people like Bill Gates, they're trying to gain control of the world through rent control, food control.
Yeah. They don't care about human beings because they're into population control, too.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. It's hard for us to understand, but that is their ultimate goal, so they can be like the puppet master running the whole world.
Yeah.
And I liked Rince's advice, own your own land.
I did, too.
Hang on to your land.
I did not expect that, and I agree. And young people listening, I know it's hard right now, but he's right. Get a job and get your own property. Resist the temptation to be taken care of by the government, because it's going to come back to bite you in such a horrible way. Be independent. The American spirit was there for a reason, and that's why this country became so great. Honey, thank you for joining me with this conversation. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. I want to remind you that you can call us and leave a message at 662-821-2040. Thank you to so many of you who have done that. Love those messages, and even if we can't play them on the air, we will play some of them. We really do appreciate. They encourage us, and also feel free to call if you disagree or if you don't like something. That's what that's for, 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net, and you can listen to the podcast at afr.net, our mothership, on any podcast platform or on my website, sandyrios.com. I hope you enjoyed this discussion today or found it challenging or learned something that will apply to us right now in this country. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.